Good morning. Today is Thursday, the 14th of October. Joining us this morning is Assistant District Attorney for the County of Humboldt, Stacy Eads. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you enjoying the brisk weather that we've been having?
Well, to a certain extent, I certainly love to look out and see the sunshine, but it's a little misleading once I go outside to take a walk, and it's a real cold, chilly wind.
Oh, man up.
That's all right, though.
All right. Are you ready for our question this morning?
Okay.
Okay. Why is a white flag used as a signal of truce?
I don't know.
Because it symbolizes untouched purity. The color white has been long used in religious ceremonies all over the world as a sign of innocence and goodwill. Because of this image, white is now becoming, and or has become, almost universally acknowledged as a sign of peace and is therefore a natural choice for a flag of truce. Logic has just entered into your life. How's it feel?
I'll take it.
Oh, boy. So with all of the changes that are going on, we've heard from Hansel in the jail, California State Prison B, some of the challenges that he's been having. We hear that from the law enforcement guys about what they can do and what they can't do, what it's worth even processing through. How does that translate into your office? Is it a frustration? Is it just what is? Are you so busy that your head's down and all that stuff is just kind of like noise on the outside? How does it work into your guys' office?
Well, sure. I think it's fair to say that somewhat all of the above. A lot of challenges, but a lot of it's out of our hands, and we just need to learn how to deal with it. I think it is pretty rough that in the recent years, our local county jail has really become a prison setting. It's a whole different makeup in terms of the inmates that are here and the length of time that they're incarcerated. At the jail used to be much shorter, so it's used for longer commitment periods and more serious offenders. And so it just really does change the whole makeup of what Sheriff Hansel needs to deal with on a daily basis. And, so naturally safety concerns, potential gang affiliation concerns within the jail, retribution, people that are there that really have nothing to lose in the event that they reoffend while incarcerated. So I think that, that's a big concern, and we have to think about that in terms of, who needs to be housed at the jail and safety concerns and risks. And also there are folks that just simply do need to be, off the streets. Limited space, all of those things are big factors that, we have to take into consideration. And also with the charging here in our office. And for, our law enforcement officers out on the street, I feel for them because, in many ways, their hands have been tied in terms of potential consequences for crimes. And I think that also goes into our local business owners and, property crimes and the potential for what can happen to offenders has been drastically modified.
You mean reduced, eliminated?
Yeah. It's gone.
Yeah.
And so it's tough, I just had to go to the mall with my teenage daughters over the weekend, and they wanted to go into one of the stores there, and which I hadn't been in for a few years. And
since mommy was a teenager, okay, we heard that one.
Didn't need to go in. But I was there, and just the number of loss prevention officers that they had to have out on the floor was fascinating to me. It's like, well, I guess this is how they have to deal. And so we're all, paying the price for all of that, which I think does get frustrating because sometimes I wonder when it is it going to be that the offenders actually get to pay the price for their behavior. But So, you know, the tide has turned a bit, but I think we just have to be kind of creative in our approaches and how we can deal with the criminal behavior and helping to keep our community safe.
Yeah, what is it Walgreens or CVS? One of those two in San Francisco now has closed 7 or 9 stores because just people will come in and just grab what they want, turn around and walk out, not pay for it, and nothing is done. You know, that lack of consequence is really got to be very frustrating, even as far removed from the small end of the financial scale is where you guys get to play. It's got to ripple through everybody.
Right.
So as you're looking at and making the determinations as a team about who to charge and who not to charge, does space fit into that equation?
It really doesn't. For me, it's something that, you know, I understand that that's a reality, that the jail has only so much space. And so there will be times where folks that I think perhaps ought to, ideally remain incarcerated for a lengthier period of time might be released on, you know, some sort of supervised release program or things along those lines, or maybe, they end up getting cited and released, and that's just kind of the reality of it. I base my charging decisions on whether there's a provable crime or not, and then what kind of triggers if they're currently in custody is I have to take that into consideration for how much time I have to make that charging decision, and whether there's additional investigation that's necessary in order to make a determination as whether that individual, has committed the crime or not, and whether there's sufficient evidence that we could admit at court, in court during trial, to prove the crime.
Yeah, it's weird that you have to go through some of those steps now just because of today's realities, but it is today's realities. You'd be foolish not to, I guess, is kind of the simplest thing. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Community Comment, where we hand the microphone over to members of our own community here on the North Coast. Whether it's about a topic on the local level, national level, or if it's just a humorous story that happened to them, you can always learn something new every Monday through Friday in the 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. hours and in the 5 p.m. hour.
Hi, this is Marty Coelho.
This is Natalie DeLapp.
This has been Dan Price.
This is Anthony Mantov.
Sam Jones here.
I'm Dave Douglas.
This is Mike Jones
for Community Comment.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads from the Humboldt County District Attorney's Office. Stacey, the concept of some of these different things that are going on and the lack of, confidence in the community that there is necessarily going to be some form of response by the legal system. How do you guys handle that when you're talking with a victim and say, we know this person did it, et cetera, but it doesn't rise to the level of, well, I guess maybe on the nasty scale, to be able to go after them because there's no room in the inn?
Well, I haven't had to have that particular conversation, and that wouldn't be a basis for us to not file or pursue charges. So maybe I was a little unclear on that in kind of my recitation earlier.
So like a break and entry, a burglary, something like that, is not a felony. It's no guns, no knives, no threats, daytime break in, nobody's home, and stuff gets taken. But there are fingerprints, so you know who it is, and it goes from there.
Okay, so you know who it is, and it's a you know, look, if this is residential burglary, so that's, you know, a serious crime, felony level crime. And it depends, you know, part of it too is it depends on who has jurisdiction over that particular crime. So if it's within, you know, the sheriff's department's jurisdiction, or is it with, you know, EPD, or is it with Arcata Police Department, Fortuna, Rio Del, all of that will factor in terms of what their specific resources are in terms of their ability to investigate that particular crime and apprehend the offender. So that, you know, we're certainly here as a resource in terms of assisting them in any way that we can, but it would, you know, be in the hands of the agency where the crime occurred within their jurisdiction. So that would kind of be the first step. And then if it comes across our desk and it's, you know, as you said, you know who it is, you have the fingerprints, and those fingerprints are indoors on things that, you know, for example, the, you know, fingerprints on a safe, you know, and the person had never been in the home, the person never had a reason to be in the home, a stranger to the residence. I am not trying to, we would probably be filing that and pursuing that.
So let's say then everything falls into place and guilty is the determination.
Okay.
Parole?
Well, so parole is after an individual has been convicted and incarcerated and sent to prison. And there's two, prison can look a little different these days. So for some types of charges, they can serve essentially, it's under Penal Code Section 1170 sub H sentencing, where the individual might be incarcerated for a period of time at the county jail, where historically they would have gone to, you know, California Department of Corrections.
Right.
And then they might even spend part of their commitment on a form of house arrest.
That basically says they can't leave the property where their abode is?
Well, they have different, well, unless they need to go do their job. So for certain necessary functions, they might be allowed. Well, so, okay, so the reality is they're going to be out in the community.
Didn't their job get them in trouble?
Yeah,
okay.
I think the idea is they're supposed to have a legit job, right?
Okay, there we go.
Pay taxes, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's, you know, so parole is after a term of prison commitment. And probation is probably what you're thinking of, which is supervised. We're not going to send you to prison now. We're going to give you an opportunity to be on probation, and you have to follow, you know, all these rules. And maybe as part of the probation terms, you are going to be ordered to serve, you know, up to 365 days in the county jail, or maybe we're going to have you go do a residential drug treatment program. You know, drug court is another, you know, outcome that happens for some offenders, where the court gives an opportunity for the individual to be on probation and comply with the laws of the community and not have to go to prison. But the idea is if they don't follow the rules of probation in terms of probation, that they could then ultimately be sent to prison on whatever period of time was left for that potential sentence.
So they're not just turned out with no consequences. There is something that they pay back with time.
Yeah. And it depends. It's case by case. So it depends on, you know, what types of circumstances that present for that particular individual, the crime, the underlying facts, what sort of criminal history the person does or does not have, what are the desires of the direct victims in the case, things along those natures. you know, that
right.
we can take into consideration, the court takes into consideration. And some crimes are mandatory prison regardless.
So that's kind of taken out of your hands then. Yeah, okay. KINS, yeah. News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads out of the District Attorney's Office. Stacey, with some of the challenges that are out there, certainly there's changing laws, changing regulations, case law interpretations, all that kind of stuff that keeps things pretty fluid your end of the prosecution business. What about after the sentencing? I know Maggie has talked over the years about following people who were, convicted murderers. And when it comes time for their parole, you guys have somebody there and you remind everybody what had happened and hopefully that, you know, they stay in where they're supposed to be in. But what about these lesser crimes, the ones that may or may not result in prison time, may not result in anything more than a couple days in jail? How do you track to make sure that if they're sentenced to anger control or Narcotics Anonymous or these various programs to try to encourage them to get their act together, that they're actually doing that stuff? Is that probation's department? Do you guys have somebody monitoring what's going on also? How do you keep that part together?
Yeah, that's a great question. It really does vary depending in large part on what the underlying conviction is. So if an individual is convicted of a felony offense and is placed on supervised felony probation by the court, then that particular individual will ultimately have specific terms that require him or her to maintain contact with their assigned probation officer. And so there are, you know, officers that are, you know, more field officers who are given a specific caseload and number of probationers that they're charged with supervising. What that looks like depends, again, on the particular offender, his or her risk level, and there are certain, you know, risk assessment tools, evidence-based tools that the probation department utilizes and kind of trying to assess what particular risk a particular offender might present as. So, you know, in theory, they're supposed to have relatively regular contact with their probation officer, check-ins. And this is similar, too, for folks that are on parole.
But do you guys and gals in the department, in the district attorney's office, do you also monitor and oversee that just to, you know, for those that you identify as particularly concerning or disturbing? Do you also just either a spot check or, you know, this is somebody I want to pay attention to because he's not a nice guy, regardless of probation, regardless of parole, regardless of where they end up, you know, if they get sent back somewhere else, you know, their town of origin or whatever it is? Do you still monitor that stuff or is that just too much and those are others' responsibilities?
Right. It really primarily is shifted over to the probation department for that supervision period. Sure, there might be an occasion, a particular offender where, I mean, for myself, I've, you know, prosecuted some very serious, you know, violent sex offenders and child molesters. And so I have, like, tracked them, but those folks are generally in prison, so I'll track to see, you know, where they're being housed, and I'll have ongoing communications down the road with the victims and families and, you know, parents of the children that were victimized, and trying to help them, and understanding, you know, potential release dates and things along those lines. But we don't specifically monitor performance on probation. But the probation department does do that. And if they find that a particular person on their caseload is not complying with the requirements of probation, there are some lower level sanctions that they can impose that don't require court involvement. But they also may file, you know, violations of probation terms, and that does bring it back before us. And so those of us that have vertical assignments where we have very specific caseloads, for example, the sexual assault unit or the domestic violence unit, where we have offenders that we kind of do like to, sometimes they're repeat offenders, and we sort of do like to monitor their behavior and their compliance, and we'll continue to participate in the prosecution for their violations of probation.
Now, you reference repeat offenders, and I know that the three strikes, which I don't know even if that's still around or if it's been gutted out or changed or redefined, but somebody who has an offense, the judge says, okay, first time, here's what we want you to do. They do it, but then they come back and reoffend in that same classification.
Mm-hmm.
Does the fact that they went through or checked off that they went through some classes, does that ameliorate anything at all? Or is it kind of like, okay, great, you warmed a chair, but you didn't do anything. Now we're going to come down like a ton of bricks. Is that, which of those two scenarios tends to play out in the court, or is it more the judge's personality than it is the actions of the individual?
Well, sure, it can vary on who the presiding judge is over a particular case in terms of whether they might be more inclined to give a person a second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, 10th, 20th chance.
You don't want to say that to this audience.
What your question made me think of, and maybe I'm stuck on property crimes a little bit, but there had been a law in the past, which was Penal Code Section 666, where multiple petty thefts could ultimately turn into a more serious crime.
Yeah, they kind of add up or convert on the weight scale into a
so
nasty.
It's like, okay, yeah, this is your fourth petty theft conviction. Now you might be looking at, you know, some prison time because you need to stop stealing. And but that's gone now. And I think that's I think frustrating. And so anyhow, so it does.
we just had the blanket pulled back just a little bit.
But
I think we'll let you settle here, take a break, and we'll be back. KINS News and Information Time is 8:40.
Hey, folks! Flying local is buying local, and with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads. Stacey, with some of the different challenges that are out there, when you see some of these national stories, the guy that was living up in Trinidad that died oh, what was it? The rich guy. Heir to, boy, you know, I should have written it down. People that you really believe were part of a criminal activity, but they then die. Does that give you a little bit of pause for relief, or does that even register? And you just kind of keep dealing with what is in front of you today on the desk?
Oh, I really focus on what I have here in front of me and what's happening here locally in our community. And I think for me personally, I have to minimize how much I expose myself in terms of horrific cases that might happen beyond our local community. And that's just in large part because of my caseload that involves sexual assault and child abuse cases and, you know, child porn. And so it's a bit of a personal mental health choice.
Yeah.
So that I kind of see the worst of the worst that happens here locally.
So how do you keep your sanity?
Well, well, you assume that I've kept it.
Point taken. You were going back to that store.
Right. So family, and, you know, I do have three wonderful girls who are doing exceptionally, and so they give me a lot of positivity and good energy and remind me, you know, of the good in the world and just associations through, you know, their activities with sports and school and friends. All of that is great, and that absolutely recharges me. It's been wonderful to see the kids back in school and the positive activities and interaction and just hearing them laugh and have fun and get to socialize and interact again. That's been really great. So that's really important.
So just kind of getting out in the normals, so to speak?
Getting out in the normals, yeah, it's really important. And exercise is really important for me personally in terms of maintaining mental health and getting out and enjoying kind of the natural beauty of our area. So that's also very important to me and reminds me why I return to my community. That's a big part of it, the natural beauty. And I can never get over, you know, how lucky we are to have the mountains and the forest and the ocean and, you know, the rivers. It's just beautiful. And to be able to go out there and have the open space that we have, that others just don't have that. And yeah, so I feel really blessed.
Don't you wonder sometimes, okay, if you were working in the concrete jungle, USA, right?
Mm-hmm.
How those folks keep it together? Yeah, let's put an hour commute each way. Or let's say you're so far away from anything that there really is, you know, you can go check out a cornfield, but that's probably not going to give you a lot of that solace. You know, those types of scenarios or those environments that you don't have to deal with, but that they deal with all the time, how they have their getaways, their releases.
Right. That wouldn't work for me, the concrete jungle. So. Yeah,
kind of had that sense.
I can do that.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, keep getting the bad guys going. You know, hopefully, has your caseload gone down at all, or is it just continuing to chug along at the same rates, whether it's in a sheltering COVID thing or whether it's normal, quote unquote?
No, I am... I have a high caseload. It does not feel whatsoever that it's gone down. In terms of like our child forensic interviews, that did go down a bit during the COVID period. We continued doing interviews. We had to screen a little bit differently, you know, just to ensure that, you know, we're keeping everybody safe with COVID. But no, we have a lot of serious, you know, I have a number of child sexual abuse cases right now. And
hopefully that'll change a little bit during the holidays for you. Thanks for coming by. and reminiscing.
Yes.
Yes. See everybody tomorrow.